Mastermind Cyclops First Picks, Hall of Fame Fans Choice Voting, a Beast Wars discussion. This is Geek Existence Transformers.
Now, all we need is a little energon and a lot of luck.
So welcome to Geek Existence Transformers.
I be your host, Eclipse Fearful, and with me be
Spooky Grabbit and Calibatron. I'm gonna say I remember when I first got into collecting.
Predacons, terrorize!
Welcome all to episode number 21 of Geek Existence Transformers, recorded April 7th, 2011. I am Weird Wolf 1975, along with
Insane Galvatron.
Post-WrestleMania for me, a kind of lackluster one at that, but there was a couple good matches. I know you're not much of a wrestling fan, but maybe you were at one time.
Yeah, back in the 80s, I was like all into it, and then a little bit in the, I guess, late 90s.
The Stone Cold era?
Actually, I came in just after Stone Cold. I was more into the Rock era.
Yeah, I'm... I like wrestling. I've actually been involved in it. I worked for a local promotion. Well, not a local promotion, but a regional promotion for about a year. And not as a wrestler, but more or less of a technical advisor and everything. And security guard and stuff. Photographer. But, you know, it's kind of a passing hobby for me. I haven't really followed it much over the last couple of years, simply that because of the fact that we don't have cable or satellite TV, so it's a little hard to follow it. But I was able to order WrestleMania the other night on WWE.com and watch it online. Well, we hooked my old computer up to my TV, and me and another buddy of mine, we watched the pay-per-view on the TV through the computer. And it was pretty cool that way. But like I said, there were some matches that kind of sucked and some that was pretty awesome. I think the most notable one was the Undertaker versus Triple H. He went for his 19-0 and got it. So now the Undertaker is still undefeated at WrestleMania. I'm inserting an edit here. During this discussion where we were talking about the Undertaker and Triple H's match at WrestleMania, I was trying to adjust the gain on my microphone, and it was causing some loud noise. I didn't realize it was rubbing against the microphone as much as I was, and it got to be pretty annoying, so I'm editing this section out, and I will let you take back off where we were talking about the Undertaker and his career. Well, I think he's getting ready to retire, so, you know, I honestly don't think he'll be wrestling a whole lot longer. Mark Calloway's his real name. I think he's like 46 now, and that's getting kind of old for a wrestler, so.
Yeah, because he was around back in the Hulk Hogan days. I remember that was the first time I was into wrestling, and, you know, he was there.
I mean, he was young. I actually remember him. Yeah, I actually remember him before he was, before he was the Undertaker. I remember him in his old NWA, WCW days. He was known as Mean Mark Callis, and for a short time he was a member of the Skyscrapers with Sid Vicious. And his finishing move was called a heart punch. He would tie you up in a rope and hit you in the center of the chest and basically knock you out.
Skyscrapers, that actually sounds kind of familiar. I may vaguely remember that. I was just too young to remember the faces.
Yeah,
so I had no idea.
Skyscrapers were originally Sid Vicious and Dangerous Dan Spivey. They were both almost 7 feet tall, between about 6'10", 7 foot, somewhere in there. Both of them highly muscular guys, and, you know, they were just the Skyscrapers. Well, Dangerous Dan Spivey got injured, and it was a legit injury. I think he had tore an ACL or something in a match. Whenever Dan Spivey went down, Mark Calloway, as Mark Callis, he kind of stepped in and filled in the role for Dangerous Dan for almost a year. And then I think it was shortly after that, though, he his contract was up there, and he went to the WWF, which was what the WWE is called way back then, and began his Undertaker persona. I remember a couple friends of mine in elementary, or not elementary, but middle and high school, whenever we first saw him, we're like, well, this is a gimmick that won't last long. You know, how's a dead man gimmick going to go, you know?
Here we are 20 years later,
yeah, and we're still talking about him. But, you know, it was a pretty good, entertaining pay-per-view. I like I said, the Triple H and Undertaker match, and the I kind of like the Randy Orton versus CM Punk match. It was pretty interesting to me. But some of the others were pretty sucky. But that's pretty much what I did last weekend and over the week. I've been working and going to meetings and everything. What'd you do?
Well, I actually started and completed a custom transformer in one day.
Ooh.
Not only
in one day.
Not just in one day, but actually in just a couple of hours. Actually, I got the idea from someone over on TFW. I can't remember the guy's name, but he had done it. And what happened was he bought some knockoff Seekers, some of the same ones that I had, and these things were horrible quality. They're actually pretty decent, except for one major flaw, and that was the wings. The little tab that the wings are on to fold them up on the back is way too small and weak. And so you're taking a 50-50 chance if you order one if it'll arrive with the wings broken or not. I ordered like six of these guys because they're relatively cheap. You know, two in Starscream colors, two in Skywarp, two in Thundercracker. When they arrived, only three of them were still intact. Both Starscreams and one of the Thundercrackers, at least one wing had snapped off. And it's such a small piece, it's irreparable. And then, of course, when I moved from my apartment to my house last summer, the one intact Thundercracker did not survive the move. I had wrapped him up, packed him away really well with all the rest of my official Transformers.
They must be really cheaply made.
I mean, it's good quality. It's just, I guess, whenever they knocked off this toy, they didn't use the, you know, Hasbro's molds. They had to make their own. And they just made the tab too small on those wings, so it doesn't hold up to the stress. I mean, you compare it to a real Starscream, you know, from made by Hasbro, and that tab, so the pin's a little bigger. You know, it's a little plastic tab that sticks in a hole. And they just made it too small. I mean, the plastic quality is good. It's just that piece is too tiny for the stress it goes under. So anyway, what this guy had done is, you know, he had these toys and they were broken, which means you pretty much couldn't transform them. And he got thinking, well, what do you do with a non-transforming Seeker? Oh, you make an Action Master out of it. So I pretty much copied his idea, but I took it a step further. And yeah, I took the Starscream and the Thundercracker, and you know, I took the arms and the legs from the knee down off of Thundercracker, put them on the Starscream, painted his waist blue, and of course the knockoff Starscream, even though he should have a red chest, it's not, it's gray. They didn't apply all the paint of being a knockoff, so then I had to just paint some red, and then I had to paint his face black and the cockpit black, and then you'll put it all together, and boom, it's Action Master Starscream. One difference I did that the other guy didn't was I took the little small wings off the side of his legs. And since, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Action Master Seeker mold, but where they no longer have the wings on their back, they got little small wings on their shoulders, like on the side of the arm. And so I just took those little small wings from they were normally in the back of the jet, and I glued them to the arm, so he's got the little wings on his arms. And I've been kind of enamored with it, you know, pretty much since last weekend when I did it, because it turned out really well for, you know, I mean, just from some broken parts I had lying around that were pretty much good for nothing but garbage. I made a pretty neat little classics figure. I now have a classics Action Master Starscream.
Sweet. I do like the pictures that you took of it. I saw them in that email, and I'm like, wow, it almost looks official.
When if our listeners are listening to the Enhanced podcast, they can take a look at their iPod or iPhone or iPad, and they should see a picture of it because don't have one yet as we're recording, but when the podcast goes live, there will be a much better photo I will take, and it'll be on the Enhanced podcast.
Time now for our eBay item of the week. This week is somewhat unique. Well, I'd say very unique, but relative to our Hall of Fame inductee, I would say, this year. We have a Mexican AFA graded Grimlock, G1 Grimlock.
Yeah, this was a very interesting auction, to say the least. I mean, I was kind of combing through eBay to see what interesting I could come across, and you occasionally do see a mint and sealed box G1 Grimlock. And it's not like they're really common, but but they do pop up from time to time. And when I saw this one, I was like, wait a minute, I can't read the language on the front of the box.
Yeah. I can kind of read it. I mean, I do know a little Spanish, but I'm very rusty at it.
So besides the fact that this guy's very rare, because he's a sealed Mexican Grimlock, it's also AFA graded, which you can imagine what that has done to the price. Current price is it's priced in Great Britain pounds. It's 900 pounds, which is approximately, with current conversion rates, $1,468 in U.S. Wow. That is an insane amount of money, but again, this toy
$1,500 for a foreign Grimlock mint and seal box. Now, I mean, the box is pretty well preserved. It's still shiny and everything. Almost looks case fresh. I mean, there's a few shelf wear edges on it, but
On the close-ups, they got close-ups of the end of the box where the tape is to show that it's still sealed, and yeah, you can kind of see the cracks in the ink along the crease of the box. You know, you can tell it's got some age to it. Yeah. There's a corner ding on the lower left corner. I'm just blown away by the fact that it's a sealed Mexican Transformer. That's just like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty pristine. $1,500, they can keep it, in my opinion, but it's pretty nice.
If you hit the lottery, would you buy it?
No.
Even if you had like,
I would much rather own a U.S. version of it. I mean, I don't know. I have a loose one, but I mean, if I was going to buy a AFA graded version, it would be a U.S. version, something I could relate to a little bit more.
I don't know. I would get it just for the novelty of it, just because it's a sealed mix. Just because I can't read the box, that's awesome to me. Kind of like the reason why I like Japanese toys, because it's like I can't read anything on this box. It's so cool. It feels more foreign and exotic.
Well, to be honest, that's kind of why I did buy some Japanese Transformers early in my collecting phase. Whenever I first got back into Transformers, I would buy a lot from Japan, or as much as I could, simply because I found the packaging so fascinating and interesting. It's like, here's a figure or a toy that's somewhat familiar, yet I can't read a thing on the box aside from the sparse English that is on the box. So, I mean, it's kind of cool, though.
But, yeah, I don't play the lottery, so it's not likely I'm going to win it, so I doubt I'll be buying this. But, hey, maybe if any of our listeners are millionaires, you know, they could buy themselves a Mexican Grimlock.
You never know.
Now it's time for Out My Wallet!
So, Greg, was your wallet screaming like a little girl this week?
It wasn't screaming too bad. It did say ouch, but it was more of a, slightly stubbed its toe rather than a, screaming bloody murder.
It basically sat on a curb holding its knee going, ah!
Ah! Ah. Yeah, like bumping the shin. Well, not only bumping the shin, that's pretty painful, actually. but no, I just picked up a couple things, one of which I actually got for the cost of shipping to the U.K., because I don't know if people remember, but a while back in the U.S., there were a lot of Marshalls and TJ Maxxes were turning up a lot of the Walmart-exclusive Ultras, which, since the Head Robots release, Hothead, the Hardhead toy had been quite valuable. Well, all of a sudden, a bunch of them turned up for next to nothing, so I cleaned one of the stores out. I figured they'd be good trade bait, and that was a good decision, because, people in the U.K., it's even harder for them to get a hold of Hardhead than it was for people in the U.S., but yet the Reveal the Shield Scout Wind Charger is plentiful over there, but yet he hasn't shown up anywhere here. I think it's just because most of the retailers have stocked up on the Hunt for the Decepticon stuff. The only Reveal the Shield we're starting to see, we're just now starting to see a few deluxes, but the Scouts and the Voyagers, as far as in the brick-and-mortar stores, just haven't been showing up. But they're, Wind Charger's plentiful over there. So I got on the 2005 boards and made a deal with a UK fan, and we traded. He sent me two Wind Chargers, and I sent him a Hardhead. So I took a Hardhead that I paid like $16, $17 for, and boxed it up, mailed it to the UK, and I've received two wind chargers. Right now, one is still sealed. One is open. Actually, the reason I wanted two, well, first off, it wouldn't have been an even trade. I wouldn't have thought to go just one for Hardhead. But I kind of want to do a custom because I want some classic Stunticons. And I want to do it masquerade style, where they're repaints of the toys that, you know, the characters that repainted themselves in the episode Masquerade. And, you know, of course, we already have a drag strip. You know, Dead End would have been from Jazz, which we only recently got a Jazz. Of course, Wild Rider, I'm in the process of painting one from Rodimus, because I know Rodimus wasn't originally Wild Rider. But he was, you know, released as that, as far as the only official toy is really rare. Breakdown would be from Sideswipe, which we've had a Sideswipe for a couple years. I keep hoping they'll release him in Breakdown colors. They did the G2 Breakdown for BotCon. And of course, you know, I'm really not happy with the Wild Rider, because if you remember the episode, it was Wind Charger who was repainted into Wild Rider. And of course, we only just now getting a Wind Charger toy, so I wanted a second one to paint as into Wild Rider. But I don't know. I mean, is this toy, because he's so hard to find in the U.S., and, you know, so his value is therefore going through the roof, I kind of hate to paint a toy that's that valuable.
Yeah, you've got two of them. I have none.
And it reminds me of the Alternators camshaft that came out. I picked him up, and he had Hasbro Toy Shops. So I managed to order two of them. And I wanted to reshell one, which actually is an incomplete project. I haven't been happy starting them, not finishing them. But I just hacked this toy up because I thought, hey, it's a $20 toy. You know, I got it early by ordering from Hasbro Toy Shop. I didn't want to wait. You know, they'll be plentiful. And he was one of those toys that, like, didn't show up hardly anywhere. And so just a few months later, we started realizing that toy was hard to find and very valuable. And I had cut one into little pieces. And, you know, felt kind of stupid about that. And I was like, okay, I should have waited to see if it was valuable. And I don't want to make that mistake again. I don't want to go hacking up and painting on a wind charger just for him to end up being a $100 scout later. It's like, ouch. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe, you know, I mean, this is Hasbro we're talking about. He's going to get a repaint eventually. You know, heck, maybe they'll repaint him to be like, was it Rook? Is that the little BotCon exclusive?
Well, repainted there's also charger? Tailgate, too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if they do Rook, though, it'll already be gray. So it'll make the customizing a lot easier to turn it into Wild Rider.
That's true.
But if it's more available, you know, I wouldn't feel as bad about waiting for the repaint to repaint, rather than repainting a potentially rare toy. So, for now, the second one is staying sealed until I decide what to do later. And the other thing I got, you know, again, thanks to Hasbro Toy Shop, I picked up Reveal the Shield Grapple. I haven't opened him yet. He just showed up yesterday. I was kind of busy last night, and then today, you know, preparing for the podcast, I haven't really had time to open him yet. But, I mean, I just basically wanted him because there's a hole in my Classics collection, because I want to try to get all the G1 characters as they're remade. I mean, he's just basically a repaint of Inferno, but with a crane instead of a little water gun.
Well, his head's remolded as well.
Yeah.
His forearms. He's actually heavily remolded.
Yeah, he's got quite a few remolded parts, but, I mean, it's nothing like going to wow me because it's the exact same transformation. It still looks very similar. I mean, I wanted it, don't get me wrong, but it just, it's nothing like, ooh, a completely new mold. You know, that experience of transforming it for the first time, got to hurry up and open it. It's just like, okay, I've handled this toy quite a bit because I've got Inferno. It just looks a little different because of slightly remolded parts. So I'll probably open him this weekend. I just haven't been in a big hurry to do it. And that's pretty much it. That's the only two things I picked up. So I'm out like, I don't know, maybe $40, $20 for Grapple and $20 for the shipping to the UK.
Yeah. Well, that's not too bad. I've got mostly non-Transformer related stuff for my out of my wallet this week. Although
off topic.
Although I did pick up a couple Transformer related items, I'll save those for later. Even though technically I already had them, and a couple of these things I've actually had ordered for about a week or so now. So my wallet actually said "ouch" last week. But I just got them, like, this week.
Delayed gratification.
I actually got one of them today in the mail, and I haven't even opened it yet. But it's one of those things that I'm going to use later. The microphone I'm using for the podcast recording here is a Blue microphone, or a microphone made by the company Blue. It's a Yeti microphone. And they also make a small portable microphone, professional microphone, called a Snowflake. And I picked one of those up pretty cheap. It was about $30 on eBay.
Isn't Yeti just another word for, like, the Abominable Snowman, which is just a white-furred Bigfoot?
Yeah, and actually they play against that, or play with that on the package of this microphone.
Yeah, because you got the, like, you got the Yeti.
Characterizations of Yetis, yeah.
Yeah, there's Yetis, which are Abominable Snowmen, and then you got a Snowflake. I'm sensing a trend.
Yeah. But, yeah, the Snowflake, it's a smaller portable version of a professional mic. You know, it should provide a good, clear, crisp recording voice, much like this one here. Like for whenever we go to the convention, hopefully we'll be able to do a podcast there, and we'll be able to use a professional mic there. So our podcast should still sound pretty good. I got that today. I got, I believe it was day before yesterday, I got in the mail a light box from Cowboy Studios via Amazon.com. It's about $23. It's more or less a light tent. The great thing with this, it came with three or four different colored backdrops that you can use, and the backdrops are actually reversible. One side is more or less like a shiny nylon, and then the other side is a felt type surface. The only drawback to it is because of what it's made from, you can't really iron it out. And the thing is that they're really creased from being folded up. Hopefully I can find some way to flatten them out, because I really like the black backdrop on it. And with a good lighting source and everything, it's you can take some really good pictures. I've posted a few on Facebook and everything. I know I think some of my favorites, I took some pictures of G1 Jetfire, and he is very shows how pristine and white he is. I mean, it's just a perfect specimen. And I love this light box. I mean, it's 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. So it's pretty good size. It should be able to fit most transformers in it. I believe I could even fit a Fort Max in it if I were to pick one up.
I thought he was more than 2 feet. I thought he was closer to 3 feet.
I think he's right at 2 feet. It might, maybe. I'll have to look that one up. I know he's quite large, but
yeah, he was like, he would fit in your light tent, but he'd pretty much be touching the top and the bottom.
Yeah. Well, the way I've got it positioned right now, I actually have the top of it as the floor of the light tent. That way I can have more light coming in from the top. And, you know, just I've got diffused light coming from the sides and more direct light coming from the top to give more light on the subject. And most of my pictures have turned out pretty good. I'm still learning with this camera that I got last week that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's a few things I'm still kind of playing with to try to learn on it. Every now and then I'll take a picture that's a little bit grainy, a little grainier than I would like. It's a learning process. And the last non-Transformer related item, off-topic item I got was today a buddy of mine called me up. He just happened to be in Best Buy, and they had a 5-disc combo pack of the Tron, the original Tron movie and Tron Legacy on Blu-ray. And I've got it right here. I'll look at it. And the great thing about this is it's got the lenticular cover for it. It doesn't have like the data disc or the light cycle that you can get at other places. But this one here comes with 5 discs. It comes with the classic movie on Blu-ray, the digital copy, the DVD, the 2D Blu-ray version, and the 3D Blu-ray version.
Ooh.
And if I'm not mistaken, it even has... Seems like somewhere I was reading that it also has a 3D DVD as well.
Maybe it's on the DVD. You can like flip it over on the other side. One side's regular, one side's 3D.
It's possible. It's possible. DVD.
Although, aren't most your 3D TVs all set up to play high definition, so it would be kind of pointless to put in a 3D DVD anyway? I mean, odds are if you've got a 3D TV, you're going to have a Blu-ray player.
Well, if 3D DVDs are more or less for non-3D TVs. They use...
the red and blue. 3D, or the red,
yeah,
green.
The red and blue. Red and
those
blue
don't
red
work
green
for me.
Glasses.
I can watch anything in 3D. In these 3D movies, like in the theater, where they use the polarized lenses, the 3D works great. I can see it really good. But then when they release it on DVD, if it's got the glasses that's the red and blue or red and green, I don't know if it's something about my eyes or what, but it just does not work. I just see whatever I'm looking at with a red and blue haze. You know,
your eyes just suck.
Yeah, I mean, I may make out like occasionally be something to be a little bit 3D-ish, like it's coming out of the screen, but like the Hasbro with the Prime we got, the Preview Prime with the 3D glasses, I went to the website and looked at it's pretty much just pictures of Prime and Bumblebee, and they transform. And there's like rocks in the bottom corner of the little image that I can tell by the spacing of the red and the blue haze that they're probably supposed to look like they're way out in the front of the figure, like really close to me. But all I see is a rock with a red and blue haze. The figure has a little bit of 3D. Like Prime will be a little bit 3D for me, but like those rocks, just they don't look 3D at all. They just look, fuzzy. And so I'm not really a big fan of the 3D with the glasses with the red and blue. It just does not work.
I don't have that issue, but I haven't even opened this yet, so because I literally got it like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before we began the podcast. But the great thing is this five disc set was originally $70. The price tag on it says $70, but I got it for $50. So
wow,
I think that's a great deal for what all I get. I kind of wish I'd been able to get like the Light Cycle you can get at Walmart, or I think Amazon.com was the one that had the data disc that you saw on the backs of the characters in the movie. But to be honest, the special stuff like that, it's one of those things where you get it out of the package and you're like, oh, cool, and then you're like, set it off to the side, never pick it up again.
Right.
So, I'd much rather have the five discs that, I can view the movie basically any way I want to, and I don't have to worry about extra stuff on it that I'll never use.
Well, especially it coming with the original version, because I've been trying to watch the original Tron since we went to see Tron Legacy. I didn't realize it was a sequel. I thought it was going to be like a reboot. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen the original Tron. And so I noticed Netflix had it, it's disc only, not streaming. I'm like, okay, well, add it to my queue. And however long ago it was that Tron Legacy was in theaters, it's been in my queue since then, and it's still showing as unavailable. I don't know if they only have one copy of the disc, and it's one of those deals where somebody got it and they're just sitting on it because they're not in any hurry to mail it in to get the next disc because they're doing most of streaming. I don't know what the deal is. All I know is I've been waiting for months to watch the first Tron. I may have to just borrow yours.
Yeah. Or just come down some evening and we'll watch it. That's the off-topic stuff I got. And the on-topic stuff, I got two Generation Scourges tonight to complete the sweeps. Although I'd still like to pick up maybe a third one. That way I can have three sweeps.
I did that months ago from Hasbro Toy Shop, and they look pretty cool together.
Sure, rub it in. It's pretty cool. These were actually found at retail. I wish I'd been able to find them myself, but fortunately I got a buddy that was also looking out for me, and he called me up and he says, what was the name of that figure you was looking for? And I told him, and he says, dude, they have two of them here. And I'm like, buy, I'll pay you back. And he brought them over this evening and paid him back for them. So it's pretty cool. That's the on-topic stuff I got. Like I said last week, I'm probably not going to be buying a whole lot for the foreseeable future as far as figures and everything. And I noticed today that my wife had actually bought the air mattresses for us to use at the hotel that we're going to share a room with some fellow collectors. And most of our spending is already done as far as the convention is gone concerned.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, so far everything is paid for now as far as to go to the convention. And now that I have Grapple and Wind Charger, I'm pretty much caught up on new toys. I think the only things I'm going to be looking to actually buy Transformer related between now and the convention would be Wheeljack, Thundercracker, and Warpath, provided we find them before then.
Well, I've got, like I said last week, I have Warpath in my pile of loot at BBTS, and as soon as he comes in, I'll go ahead and ship that. I mean, he's the only thing in it, but I don't foresee me purchasing anything else through BBTS or anything until after the con, because, like I said, I kind of want to watch what I'm spending. But Warpath is one of those figures I really want to get. Mm-hmm. And like you, I'm almost done with the new stuff that's out. I still need to pick up a Grapple, and if I can land one, I'd like to get a Wind Charger. Seems like there was another Voyager.
You already have Lugnut, right?
Yeah, I have Lugnut.
Well, there's Strafe, but he's not really on my radar.
Yeah, that's probably the one I was thinking of, but I'm not going to get Strafe because I think his color scheme is hideous.
Yeah, it just doesn't look good on that, because that toy looks too much like Mindwipe to pull off any other character.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I'm going to be getting between now and then is, if I can find them, is the Grapple and the Wind Charger. I have Wheeljack. The Ripple labels are on their way for him. Really can't think of anybody else I want to get.
So. That's what's good about being caught up is, like you said, we're saving for the convention, and it's not like there are going to be figures coming out that, oh man, I want that, but I can't get it because I'm going to save for BotCon. Everything's paid for. We just got to save spending money, and there's not that much left that we're looking for to actually pick up, so there's not going to be a lot of money to spend. There are not a lot of things to spend money on, so saving up for the convention should be relatively easy.
Well, on top of that, too, I won't have to dip into my funds that I want to spend at the con on picking up things at the convention that I normally would buy at a store if I could find them. I was afraid that I was going to have to wait till I got to the convention to get characters like Wheeljack and Warpath and everything, because they come in and out of stock so quickly online. I didn't think it was going to be possible to pick them up. But now, that I actually have them, I don't have that worry, so I won't have to spend that money. And if I bought them at the convention, chances are they would be exorbitantly expensive because, the sellers would know, or the dealers would know how sought after they are. So, I saved a lot of money by picking them up now.
Well, plus, even if they don't gouge people, they're going to pay retail for them to get them. So, mm-hmm. They're going to have to make some money, so you're going to have to pay at least a slight markup at the convention. Yeah. Whereas, like I said, buying them from Hasbro Toy Shop with the discount codes that they often have out, or picking them up locally, we're getting them pretty much retail price. So, it's always better that way.
Well, I'm still, like I said, I'm going to do like what I did with Wheeljack and the others. Just keep an eye on Hasbro Toy Shop, and even if I have to do it while I'm at work from my phone, just keep an eye on the Hasbro Toy Shop and add them to my cart and check out really quick. Even if I'm sitting behind one of my stores that I deliver to, that's actually how I picked up Wheeljack and Thundercracker and Rekgar is I happened to be notified of it while I was at work and ordered them online that way from my phone.
Yeah, that's how I've always done it, because I've never caught anything in Hasbro Toy Shop while I'm at home. It's always while I'm, I'll just get on my phone and open it up and hit refresh, and ooh, it's in stock. Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think that'll do it this week for our Ouch My Wallet segment. We'll move along.
Reporting directly from HyperCon, this is the Cybertron News Network.
Mastermind Creations, you may have heard of them. They created the Hearts of Steel version Optimus Prime character. What was it called, Greg? I'm drawing a blank on it.
Nightmorpher Commander, and then they did the black repaint, Nightmorpher Annihilator, which I want to pick up a book on.
Yes, they are. If you're unfamiliar with the Hearts of Steel line, I believe it was Dreamwave. Was it Dreamwave that had it, or was it IDW?
I'm wanting to think it was Dreamwave, but I could be wrong.
But basically, the premise behind Hearts of Steel was it was a what-if scenario. What if the Transformers weren't awoken in 1984, but rather 1884? And what kind of alt modes would they have? Well, Optimus Prime was like a locomotive.
Megatron was
like a cannon of sorts.
Like what is it called? A howitzer, is what they call it.
Yeah. And Shockwave was a battleship, much like the, I believe, the old Ironsides battleship from the Civil War. And that is exactly what they are coming out with. Their first pictures of Mastermind Cyclops, basically Hearts of Steel Shockwave. We saw the first official pictures of the alt mode.
These look like CAD images to me because they're just a little too shiny for a prototype.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's the but detail on them is a little bit high too for a toy. I'd say some of the details won't be as prevalent on the actual toy, just to save some costs.
I don't know. These third party companies, they usually kind of go all out. You know, although I will say with the Nightmorpher Commander, he did look kind of cheap. It wasn't necessarily because he was. It was just the colors they used, that bright red and the bright blue, and not a whole lot of paint apps. You know, that toy could really use some, like a black wash to bring out the detailing and just to kind of dull the color a little bit. But I think when they did the Nightmorpher Annihilator in black, it looked so much. It looked like better quality just because of the plastic color that was used. I wouldn't be surprised this guy doesn't look pretty similar to that. If they use a plastic color and quality that will have a nice shine to it, it could end up looking that good.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of sculpted detail in their releases.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind picking up a Nightmorpher Commander if I can at the convention. That's also one of the things that's going to be on my want list. And who knows, maybe this might actually be out by the convention. I doubt it, but you never know.
Well, I know they have another release that we've seen pictures of earlier. Was their Assassin Squad, which was also a steam locomotive, but it was a very funky looking one because it pretty much pulled a G1 reflector. Except it was, you know, the bots are based on the Insecticons, but they all transform and link together to make a locomotive about the same size as Prime.
Yeah.
Or I should say Nightmorpher.
And that's actually kind of cool too. But they do some really cool stuff based on some an incarnation of the characters that you normally wouldn't see. I don't think Hasbro has any plans whatsoever of pursuing the Hearts of Steel type line. And to be honest, I really don't think a Hearts of Steel line would do too well in mass market retail, simply for the obscurity of it, unless you're a hardcore comic fan. You really wouldn't know about it. And also, the alt forms are very archaic by today's standards. I mean, most kids today, they really don't identify with Civil War battleships or anything. Mainly, these are geared for the adult collector. So, you know, that's about the only kind of people that would actually purchase it.
I don't know if you were aware of this. You know, for listeners, some probably are, some may not be. But their original release, the Nightmorpher Commander, was actually designed by a fan and who had looked into having it produced himself. He was a student learning 3D CAD, and so this was his first assignment when they had to, like, design something. He took the comic book images of Prime in both train and robot mode and then basically designed the Transformer out of it and rendered it in CAD. And then he pursued trying to have it actually mass-produced himself, and I guess got in a little over his head as far as, you know, trying to have the molds and stuff made, and had a lot of problems, and from my understanding, he spent a lot of money trying to have tooling and stuff made, and it ended up being a bust because the final product was just crappy quality. You know, because there's a lot of things about tolerances and stuff that he hadn't learned. And so he kind of scrapped the idea after losing a bunch of money on it. And then Mastermind Creations, now this, then again, he may have started this company and after he learned more, or I was kind of under the impression that they were somebody else that had some manufacturing experience that, like, just like worked out a deal where, like, hey, we'll manufacture your design, you know, because it looks really cool. And so that's kind of how it came to be. So any fans out there that have any ideas for Transformers they want to see made, if you don't have the ability to make something, learn how to render it in CAD. There's some free programs out there you can use. I think one's called SketchUp. I'm fond of one called Libre. They have a free version, although I like SolidWorks, but it's pretty pricey. But yeah, I mean, just play around and learn how to use it. Try to get your design in 3D, and hey, one of these third-party companies may contact you. Be like, hey, we'll make that for you, if, you know, for just a percentage. And yeah, I mean, that's what this guy did. It's something he dreamed up and designed, and now you can buy it.
Moving on to our big topic of the week, as far as news is concerned, the buzz on the forums this week has been, over the last week or two, has been the Transformers Hall of Fame fans' choice voting. The Transformers Hall of Fame, which is held at BotCon beginning last year, is a rather new and somewhat exciting thing. I know I totally enjoyed last year's Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be cheesy, but it actually was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fun, and very, it was very enjoyable. It's not just fun, but I mean, as far as you know, interesting standpoint. They introduced, who was it, Megatron, Starscream, Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, and Dinobot last year.
Well, and the way they did it was they had the four automatic nominees, which were the first four you named, and then they had a fan's choice, where I think there were nominations first, and I don't necessarily know they went with the voting results as far as to pick which one, but there were several contenders, and like they picked all but one. Dinobot was the ones the fans chose. The other contenders that were available for voting, I think, was Soundwave, Grimlock. I'm trying to remember who else. I don't remember if Shockwave was one or not. They had five, you know, choices that you could vote on officially, but only the fifth one of those was chosen by the fans. And then you know, vote, okay, here's the one we vote between. And of course, Grimlock ended up winning. So I don't know for sure how they're going to do it this year. They've asked for people to make nominations. Each of the boards would have like a week that they had a thread open where you nominate, and then the moderators would go through and tally all the bots that were nominated, and some of them had pretty long lists of bots. And then they had like the voting that opened, and each board kind of had their own winner as far as the one that got the most votes. Now, if they do like last year, they'll take the ones with the most votes, and that character will be added in amongst some already pre-selected bots. And then we'll somehow vote again, and that's the one that will get into the Hall of Fame. And then again, they may just go ahead and take the winner from all the voting here on the boards and just put that one straight in. We don't know exactly how they're going to do it this year. But I do remember last year there were some, you know, it's like you had all this stuff on the boards where everybody was nominating and voting, but then the winner wasn't determined exclusively from that. That was just the one more candidate to go in to be voted on amongst some other pre-selected candidates to be voted on.
Yeah, well, I do remember. It seemed to me that Dinobot was rather a surprise. Everybody, you know, seemed to be really excited whenever he won. Although it wasn't really much of a surprise, but you know, I just don't think a lot of people were expecting it. I think a lot of people were expecting more along the lines of like Shockwave or Grimlock.
They were expecting another G1 character, I think.
But Dinobot won out last year.
And I think I know why, though. The group I was with at the Hall of Fame dinner at our table, we were discussing it, and because we were all kind of shocked. We thought, yeah, Dinobot, he's a really popular character in Beast Wars. But, you know, all these other characters are more iconic. I mean, Soundwave is far more iconic than Dinobot. And so we would have thought it would have been shoo-in, but then the conclusion we kind of came to was that with the G1 fans, there were four people you could vote for, four characters you could vote for. Whereas with if you were a Beast Wars fan, you had one. So you take, even though there may be more G1 fans than Beast Wars fans, the G1 vote was divided four ways, whereas the Beast Wars vote was united. I mean, let's face it, somebody who's really into Beast Wars likes it a lot better than G1. They're going to vote for any Beast Wars character over any G1 character. Doesn't matter. And ultimately, I think that's why Grimlock won, was because, or I mean, Dinobot won, because his, the vote wasn't split. I mean, Beast Wars had one character, so all your Beast Wars fans vote for Dinobot. Whereas with the G1 fans, well, this person wants Grimlock, but this person wants Soundwave, this person wants Shockwave. And so the vote was divided amongst those other characters.
Yeah. Well, this year, the nominees varied depending on site you went to. But we won't go over all the nominees simply because we just don't have the time. But we'll go over who won on a few of the major sites. I apologize ahead of time if we actually missed a site that that was involved in the voting. But we'll start off with TFW 2005. The voting there was won out by Grimlock by a landslide. He won with 434 votes, and the runner up was Shockwave.
Yeah, I think,
now I'm not exactly sure. I missed the final tally on Shockwave, so I don't know exactly how many votes he received, but I do know that Grimlock won 434 votes.
Well, I think you can look at these results, because we're hitting the top four Transformer sites, and you know, just looking at the number of votes that the winner had, it's obvious which website is the biggest and gets the most hits and the most people, which is why we started with it. I mean, 434 votes compared to, you know, Cybertron.com, that, you know, their winner only had 65 votes. And you know there's going to be some overlap. Some people go to more than one website. You vote on this website, run over to this other website you like, and vote again.
And it's interesting to note, looking on the page for TFW, where they're talking about the 2011 Hall of Fame winner, Fans Choice winner, Grimlock, the Facebook like down there, Greg Berger is one of the people that likes it. So I kind of wonder if he's actually going to be a guest this year. I think it would be really awesome if he is.
Especially if Grimlock ends up being the one voted in.
Yeah. And if by chance, I know one of the things I'm going to be looking for at the convention is definitely a Mint Seal Box Grimlock or a Mint and Box Grimlock. That would be totally awesome to have one autographed by Greg Berger. The next site that we're going to talk about is Sabertron.com. Grimlock was the winner there as well, but the voting was a lot closer on Cybertron.
Yeah, we had the same results, Grimlock winning and Shockwave being the runner-up. But like I said, these much lower numbers. Grimlock had 65 votes. Shockwave had 64. So Grimlock barely won.
But it was a landslide on TFW, but Cybertron, they came in with one vote to win Grimlock in. The AllSpark is our next website, oddly enough, Grimlock was not even in their top two.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure he was nominated, to be honest with you. I don't remember to look at the nomination list. I don't have it right directly in front of me. Actually, I can pull it up real quick, though. Yes, Grimlock was on their list, but he did not get... I think he was third on votes. So he was in the top three. But yeah, he was beaten out by... the runner-up was Hot Rod / Rodimus Prime.
With 18 votes.
I don't even think he was nominated on some of the other sites. Yeah. But then the winner was, you know, big surprise, drum roll, Beast Wars Megatron. Which, you know, I've always kind of wondered about that, because he is a different character than G1 Megatron, but he's still Megatron. How would Hasbro handle that? Would they consider Beast Wars Megatron already being in there? Because after all, Megatron was already inducted last year.
Well, technically they're not the exact same character. So I would lean toward him being a totally different character and being eligible.
So Hasbro would have two different Megatrons in there?
Well, I mean, Optimus Prime, I would say, you know, is eligible. You know, I don't think there's... I think G1 Optimus Prime is obviously one of the most iconic. I really can't say if any other Optimus Prime since then has been as iconic and memorable as G1 Optimus Prime. So I really don't think that there would be... any danger of, say, Cybertron or Energon Optimus Prime being voted into the Hall of Fame. But then again, stranger things have happened. Now, Optimus Primal, I wouldn't argue that he is Optimus Prime, so I think he would be eligible. And this is my opinion, but I wouldn't think you could exclude different eras. I mean, if Dinobot is eligible, then I believe Beast Wars Megatron would be as well.
Right. Well, Dinobot was he was the only character of that name. I was just thinking more along the lines of, you know, does Hasbro view the Megatron that got inducted last year? Because when you looked at the tech specs or what have you, or the bios of the characters that got voted in last year, you know, the descriptions kind of sounded like a mishmash. Like, for example, Jazz mentioned him, you know, being, you know, a sports car ninja, you know, and really liking music. So they kind of mishmashed, you know, animated Jazz and G1 Jazz. You know, the characteristics and traits of both Jazzes, despite them being different characters, kind of all grouped together as the Jazz that was put into the, or that was up for nomination. He actually didn't get put in. He was one of the ones you could vote for. Mm-hmm. And so with them taking, like, basically every character named Jazz and just kind of smushing it together into one Jazz for the Hall of Fame, I'm kind of wondering if they might not have done the same thing with the Megatron. Like, when Megatron got put in, it was like all Megatrons. Like, when Optimus Prime was put in, it was all Optimus Primes. I mean, because like I said, they did smush all the Jazzes together. That's the one I can recall off the top of my head. I don't remember, you know, Primes and Megatron's profiles well enough off the top of my head to know if they did that. But that's kind of the thinking I was going on there was, you know, could Megatron be all Megatrons? Like, Jazz was all Jazzes.
I don't know. That would be something, a question to pose on the forums for discussion.
Shocking. Weird. Or downright crazy. However you describe it, it's time now for Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah. You're kind of probably wondering why we inserted the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot intro right before the last Hall of Fame website fans' choice voting.
It's because of the results.
Yeah, because of the results. we'll go with the runner-up first. Let's talk about the runner-up first. Grimlock. He came in second in votes with 23 T-Formers.
He actually only had 22, and as we were looking these up for the podcast, I realized I was a registered member there, so I went ahead and voted again for Grimlock to bring him up to 23. Because I had not, I'd only voted on TFW. I hadn't voted on the other websites, but their voting was still open because they were doing it through Facebook. So I went ahead and clicked another vote in Grimlock 23, but he still lost by 7 votes. The winner had 30.
And the winner was our Whiskey Tango Foxtrot for this week, Micromaster Transport Erector.
Now,
with 30 votes.
I have to say, I mean, because this is supposed to be nominating in characters that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and I know people are wanting an obscure character. I don't know why, but that's the campaign that's going around. So people want an obscure character to be in the Hall of Fame. But it's the Hall of Fame. Obscure is the exact opposite of fame. It makes absolutely no sense to rally around to try to get an obscure character into the Hall of Fame. And I have to say, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot to everybody who thinks that's a good idea.
Well,
I mean,
contradiction. Not only that, and I really don't want to sound like a sourpuss here, but Erector, for crying out loud, I mean, it's quite obvious why people want this character to be in the Hall of Fame.
The
because
name.
Of his phallic... reference name, you know, grow up, people. Yeah, I mean, yes, I know this is for fun and everything, but
and it's about toys. It's kind of, you know, it's like, why tell people to grow up when you're talking about collecting toys? But at the same time,
yeah, you know. I mean, you know, this is the Hall of Fame. It's meant to commemorate the characters that we all grew up to love and remember the most.
The director had no characterization. He was never in any fiction.
Yeah, he had no characterization, and the only reason he is in the voting is because people want him in there because
this campaign that, you know, I guess T-Formers was the one website they could get enough support for this campaign, because it was going on TFW as well. There were people pushing
for Erector. And actually, Erector was in the lead for a short while, but people there actually gained their senses and voted for someone that made sense.
I think the campaign is being very vocal to get Erector in there. Just could not withstand the sheer numbers of registered users of TFW. They just didn't have enough people in on the joke. And that's why they all voted really quick and early. That's why he had the lead for a short time. But then as the polling was open and more of the registered members could log in and vote, these people were voting seriously.
Yeah,
my thoughts on this whole Erector thing, had the Hall of Fame been as cheesy as I expected it to be last year, I would have been on board voting for Erector too. Because, hey, after all, it's toys. Let's not take it serious. It's for fun. Let's be goofy. Yeah, just to be funny, let's get Erector in there. But again, after seeing how well the Hall of Fame was done last year and how they didn't just...
And dignified,
you know,
as well.
It was very dignified, and they didn't just vote on the characters, but also real people behind the franchise. I mean, the Hall of Fame it ended up being a very classy event. So therefore, I think it should be treated as such by the fans. And I think trying to do something slapstick and goofy like getting Erector in there would have worked if it had been, you know, the slapstick goofy event. But considering the way that it came off, and it was actually done very nice, it's kind of disrespectful to try to pull a prank like
that.
Well,
yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I'm looking at it. And to be honest, you know, I mean, you have the likes of Peter Cullen, Hideki Yoke, you know, Aaron Archer, these people that were inducted into the Hall of Fame along with these characters to the very next year, the second year of the Hall of Fame existence, to try to vote in a character such as Erector into it because of a penis joke is really poor taste, in my opinion.
And I'm surprised that T-Formers, of all websites... Well, they obviously had a low enough voter turnout. They only had, you know, the winner only had 30 votes, which was more than AllSpark had. But, I mean, still, that's not a real high number. But yet, there was enough people on the campaign went to that website that they could actually get Erector to win the vote. I would have thought T-Formers would have been, you know, would have had a few more people involved to vote that than what they did. Yeah. Unless their podcast just didn't, you know, plug the Hall of Fame voting enough to get enough people there.
I just don't understand why people would want to... literally piss on the dignity that is supposed to be in the Hall of Fame. That is what a Hall of Fame is, and you know, maybe I'm looking at it a little too serious, but at the same time, you know, look at who was inducted last year, the real people that were inducted, the real emotion. I mean, you can't say that you didn't have a little tear in your eye when Peter Cullen got up there and gave a speech.
Well, he definitely had a lump in his throat when he was talking. I mean, he was obviously very moved by the fact that that a character that he gave life to was cared so much about. You know, it was an emotional moment for him. And so you're going to go up there and be like, hey, you know, hey, Peter, you know, have an erection next to your Peter. It's just, you know, it's just wrong.
Yeah. And I really do. I think it's poor taste, and the people that were behind the voting for this, you know, dude, it's just not cool.
I do have to give the...
I have to admit, whenever I first saw it, I'm like, I kind of chuckled at first, and then I got to thinking, I'm like, you know, that character has no place in the Hall of Fame. None.
Well, he's not, like I said, he's not even a character. I mean, what's he got? A tech spec on the back of his box?
Possibly. Yeah.
That's it. But I have to give the websites that did the polls credit, though. They ran it honestly. You know, they went through and every character that got nominated was put into the polling, you know, because they could have very easily been like, oh, come on, Erector, that's not going to get any. Rector's not a character. And very much looked at it the way we do and just left him out of the poll. But they actually went through, tallied all the characters. If they were nominated, they were on the list. So I got to give the website some credit for at least being honest with the polling.
Yeah. Transformers.com will have the final fans vote on April 13th, which is next week. Hopefully this podcast should be up by then. So if you're listening, head over to Transformers.com and be sure to vote for the final fan vote on who should be in the final or in the Hall of Fame. And if by chance Erector does make the list of nominees, I beg of you to not vote for Erector. I mean, for crying out loud, just think about what the Hall of Fame is and what you're doing. I don't think it's funny at all.
I think if they're going to do this like last year, you know, you're going to already have three or four characters Hasbro has already selected to be up there eligible for voting, and then they're just going to take the fans' choice for that last nominee. In which case, I think looking at the numbers just on these four websites, unless there's another bigger one out there I'm not aware of, it's going to be Grimlock.
Yeah.
The only other possibility I can see is that they take all these main, like these four websites, and maybe they've got another one or two out there that we're not aware of that they're working through. You know, they may just take the winner from each website and put them up there, in which case you're going to be looking voting between, you know, Grimlock, Beast Wars, Megatron, and Erector. You know, it's a three-way vote between those three because those are the only three winners you have between these four websites. You know, and that would be kind of sad. I'm willing to bet they're going to do like last year. You'll probably see Jazz still in there. The Shockwave will probably still be in the running. Who else was in there last year for the vote?
Because
I know they showed the
Blaster?
Videos for
him. Was it Blaster?
I don't know. Was Blaster? I know Soundwave was, but he... I know Soundwave and Shockwave and Jazz. I know those three were. I think Blaster was on screen when they were, because there were a lot of scenes with him and Soundwave. I don't think he was actually could be voted on.
I really don't remember. It's been almost a year now, so it's hard to
should look that up. But yeah. But yeah, I'm willing to bet that you're going to see some of those guys return. I mean, Soundwave, Ironhide, and Ratchet are automatically going to be inducted. But I wouldn't be surprised to at least still see Shockwave and Jazz back up for nomination again to vote. Because they were in there to be voted on last year. I can see those guys carrying over.
Yeah, I'd like to see Corey Burton there as well, you know, to induct Shockwave into the Hall of Fame since he was the voice of G1 Shockwave. It'd be really cool. And like I said, if by chance Greg Berger happens to be at BotCon this year, to see him inducted into the Hall of Fame as well. Because he did not just Grimlock. He did a couple others as well. I don't remember off the top of my head who did what characters he did voice, but you know, it'd be nice to see him in there because his voice is so recognizable in the Transformers, especially in Generation 1. I'd like to see him in there as a personal.
It's a personal thing. Choice.
Yeah, personal choice. But let's move on to our last subject of topic of discussion here. It's not news. It's kind of something we promised a few weeks back, but we kind of pushed it aside because of different things. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. It's just kind of give it a little time in the limelight. We wanted to talk about Beast Wars this week. Don't really have a set order of discussion here. But I thought it'd be cool to just talk about Beast Wars, you know, since both Insane Galvatron and I are heavy, heavy G1 fans. But, you know, you can't ignore the other lines of Transformers. And Beast Wars is probably, I would say, the second most important Transformer line in Transformers history. You know, animated's probably getting there pretty close as far as story goes, but I'd say Beast Wars is easily number two behind Generation 1.
I would even say, I mean, because I think at this point we're just talking popularity, and you're right, animated is really catching up there. If you factor it in, you know, some would say animated would be the new number one. But I think even before animated came along, there were people that would say Beast Wars has replaced G1's number one. It's a very popular show, and it's because it was well written. I mean, just I have to admit, as much as I love G1, it was just kind of in that goofy slapstick, it's a cartoon, you know, kind of. Yeah, there were some more serious stories to it, and it had some tone in certain episodes, but for the most part, it was just a fun cartoon. And it was well written for what it was, but it was just written to be a fun cartoon. Whereas Beast Wars, they took the story and the mythos a little more serious by this point. You know, Beast Wars, as far as that goes, is what we always wanted G1 to be. And it's, you know, more serious tone to the mythos and trying to take things literal and not contradict itself with like origins of characters and things. And, you know, as far as me personally, I did not like Beast Wars when it first came out. I mean, granted, I was out of Transformers by then. It came out in 1995. I was like junior in high school. But I'd kind of fallen out of Transformers as a kid, you know, right around the time G2 started to come out. I remember having some MicroMasters and maybe a couple Action Masters, and that was pretty much the tail end when I lost interest. You know, 'cause I was getting older, starting to get into girls and things. And, of course, you know, I was always kind of aware of it. Like, I'd be at the store, and I would see the Transformers on the shelf, and G2, you know, at first I thought, oh, that's kind of cool for somebody who's lost their original G1 Prime or didn't get one. There's one on the shelf, but his trailer's black now. That's weird. You know, and I was aware of it, and I saw the animals on the shelf, and I'm like, oh, the Transformers are animals now? That's kind of strange. I don't want nothing to do with that. That's just weird.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, like I said, I'm in high school, so I'm really not into playing with toys anymore, so I had no desire to buy any, but I just looked at it and I thought it was strange that, oh, what a weird twist for Transformers to make. It wasn't until I became a father that I started watching Beast Wars. This was actually around the time, I think it was in 99 or maybe even in 2000. Beast Machines was getting ready to start. It hadn't launched yet. Beast Wars had already ended, and I was catching the reruns on Fox Kids during the week. And I think Beast Machines had actually started airing. They aired Beast Machines on Saturdays, like in the Saturday morning cartoons. And Beast Wars was playing as reruns through the week. And when I started watching it, it's basically because, you know, I had my daughter, and I would come home from work, and you know, she liked to watch cartoons. So I'd watch cartoons with her. And just going through the available cartoons to watch, I was like, well, hey, this, you know, I was into Transformers as a kid. Obviously, the original Transformers aren't going to be on TV anymore, but this is on, you know, so we'll just watch it together. You know, maybe she'll kind of get into Transformers a little bit. And I was quickly engaged by the stories. I mean, the stories were better. It was written better. It was more engaging. The characters grew over time. I still didn't really want to collect, but I did enjoy watching it. Because, again, I still didn't like the idea of Transformers being animals, so I was like, I don't want any of the toys. It wasn't until the episode The Agenda when Ravage showed up. And at this point, I had not even started looking back into Transformers. They were just a vague memory. Only a couple of characters I could remember really well. And then there were just, I could remember concepts. Like, well, I remember there was, you know, a tape deck dude. And I remember there was, like, a guy that turned into a tanker truck, which was Octane, but I couldn't remember at the time. I didn't know the names. So when The Agenda happened and Ravage showed up, and I remember when he transformed into the tape and went into the tape deck in the ship. Just hearing that familiar transformation sound for the first time in probably, at this point, it had been, 15 years. Mm-hmm. It sent chills up my spine. And that's kind of what ignited my fire to get, you know, looking into the old Transformers a little more. And then, you know, you had the last episode of The Agenda where you actually see the G1 bots all laying around the Ark. And that's really what sucked me back into collecting. Because it was after that I wanted an Optimal Optimus. I'm like, okay, I don't really play with toys anymore, but I've got to have an Optimal Optimus because that's so cool. He's like, you know, he's no longer an animal, or at least not completely. He's got, you know, vehicle modes. It looks a lot like Optimus Prime. I got to have it. And, of course, then RID followed, which got me back into collecting. But Beast Wars is what opened the door because of the stories.
Well, it sounds like you started getting back into it a little bit earlier than I did, to be honest. I got back into collecting. You know, I'm like you. Toward the end of G1, I kind of started tailing off. I think around the time the MicroMasters were out, and Action Masters, you could find them on the shelf, but they weren't really prevalent at the time. That's whenever I got out of G1 and out of Transformers and out of toys altogether. Like you, I started taking an interest in girls and focusing on schoolwork and everything. I grew up. And, you know, it wasn't until after I got married that I actually started getting back into Transformers. As many of you may know, I grew up in South Florida and went to college in the central part of the state. And but my family is all originally from Kentucky here. And once I got married, my wife, she's from Pennsylvania, and she kind of wanted to move closer to Pennsylvania, and she liked Kentucky when we came up here. So kind of moved up here and started living up here. And my parents moved about 3 or 4 years later. About a year after that, my mom was going through some old stuff that they had brought up here in the move, and found a box that contained all my old Transformer collection. And she called me up and said to come out and look at it, and if I didn't want anything out of it, she's just going to put it in a yard sale. And I went out there and started going through it, and I'm like, wow, these bring back so many memories, so many fond memories. And they were well kept and everything. And I got back into Transformers then. And, you know, having looked at them, and I brought them all back to our apartment that we lived in, I started thinking, you know, I wonder what kind of Transformers are on the shelves today, if they're still on the shelf. You know, I hadn't been looking at toys at all, you know, so I really didn't know how far along Transformers had come. Maybe they had just completely disappeared. So the next time I was over in Walmart, we went in there, and they had some Beast Wars toys on the shelf. This was around the time that Beast Machines was actually on television. And
so it was around the same time that it was hitting me.
Yeah, but I never got to see the television show for Beast Wars until it came out on DVD, and you actually caught it. You probably predated me getting back into Transformers, maybe by a couple months, to be honest.
Yeah, because it was only a couple of months that it was airing on TV, and then not even it was well before season 2 of Beast Machines started that they started playing the earlier episodes of season 1 of Beast Machines during the week. Yeah. It was just like they had to wait. Because you figure if you're doing 5 episodes a week, you know, it's not going to take long. I mean, 3 weeks, you've gone through 15 episodes. So it's like they had to air enough episodes of Beast Machines on Saturdays first before they could start rerunning them during the week.
Yeah.
And that's what I caught, because Beast Machines was already on the air. It was just they weren't doing the reruns yet.
Well, whenever I caught it, there was no Beast Wars on the air. It was all Beast Machines. And there you could still find some of the later Beast Wars stuff on the shelf. And I did start seeing the Beast Machines toys on the shelf. But as I looked at the Beast Wars stuff, I'm like, you know, I really wasn't sure how I liked the animals at first. You know, I mean, there were some that looked cool, but the overall aesthetic of them, I didn't care for at all. I didn't understand how, you know, if they were supposed to be animals, robotic animals. If they were supposed to be robotic animals, why would they look very unrobotic in their beast modes? You know, I really didn't understand. It wasn't until the Rhino DVD sets for Beast Wars came out. I'd heard a lot of people say, you know, how good the Beast Wars television show was. So I took a gamble. I'd already got the Rhino G1 sets, and I'm like, well, since Beast Wars was the next television show after G1 in the United States, you know, why not have that as well? So I went ahead and picked those up, and I started watching them from the beginning. And I have to say, just like you, I was very captivated by Beast Wars and the storytelling and the character development that was in the series. And the more I got attached to the characters, the more I warmed up to the actual toys themselves. I understood what the, you know, the beast forms were supposed to represent, and
why they had them,
and everything, and it made a lot more sense. And I just enjoyed them a whole lot more. And
well, the biggest thing for me was I was a truck, not monkey. You know, that was my whole big thing was, well, Optimus Prime's not supposed to be a monkey. He's a truck. And then once I realized that this was not the same Optimus Prime, I was able to warm up to it. Because it's like, okay, this is a different character, so, okay, I'll give him a shot. He just has the same name.
Yeah. And I was much the same way. And, you know, I still to this day prefer Generation 1. But I do not hate Beast Wars by any means now. Matter of fact, there's some episodes of Beast Wars that I actually rank higher in my preference list than I do some G1 episodes. And, you know, Beast Wars toys were very different from what we were used to in Generation 1. You know, we had the chrome and, you know, I mean, there were some, like the Transmetals that had vacuum metalized chrome, but in Beast Wars. But, you know, the toys were such a departure from what I was used to in Generation 1 that, you know, it took some time to actually understand why I like them. And the whole reason behind me liking these toys was because of the television show. And I think that is the best, the reason why you can say that Beast Wars was so successful was because, as a toy line, was because Hasbro actually marketed them in a way that really went over with the children and the fans alike by giving G1 nods in the cartoon. Or the CGI show. So I honestly think Beast Wars was a popular hit because of the show, not because of the toys. Whereas in Generation 1, I firmly believe it's because the toys were so cool that the cartoon caught on.
You know, something I would like to see is, you know, if we want to get more into the fiction of Beast Wars now, something that always kind of struck me is, you know, because if you watch Generation 1, you know, millions of years pass, and there's not a whole lot changes. I mean, other than they're just still fighting a war, but, you know, robot designs are still very similar. They're, you know, similar in size. You know, I mean, heck, in the first episode, 4 million years pass while they're in the Ark crashed into the mountain, which Beast Wars occurs during that 4 million years, you know, because they travel back in time because Beast Wars are supposed to be from further into the future. And so what always struck me was you had not a lot of major changes going on in the G1 universe over the course of millions and millions and millions of years. Well, in Beast Wars, there's a comment made to, you know, that it was happening 300 years after the Great War ended, which we would take that to mean, like, after the Rebirth, because that's when the new Golden Age of Cybertron and Decepticons kind of left in Scorponok, you know, the battle station. And so, okay, in 300 years, they went from being Autobots and Decepticons to being Maximals and Predacons. And they went from being these big, huge, hulking robots to being much smaller, barely bigger than humans. You know, considering how few changes there had been to the Transformers for millions of years before, what happened in that 300 years? You know, I mean, I would love to know. I mean, you have robots that lived for millions of years. They could remember the start of the war. And then all of a sudden, we're only 300 years after the end, and most people only know what they've read about it. It's like something major happened to where you have a complete new generation of robots that none of them were alive during the war, even though it was only 300 years ago. And very few of those that were alive were still around. I think that's what they said about Ravage, is he was one of the few Decepticons that was granted amnesty and upgraded to a Predacon. You know, I mean, so what about the rest of them? I mean, it just seems strange to me what major events took place on Cybertron during that 300 years to give such a drastic change in such a short amount of time.
Well, I think the drastic change didn't necessarily happen on Cybertron, but rather on Earth, and it was a marketing thing from Hasbro.
Well, yes, obviously. We're talking about the fiction.
I know.
I don't know, I'm kind of divulging off of Beast Wars here, but that's the general premise, is that it's 300 years later, and here's why everything is so different. Here's how everything's different. And, you know, that's what I would like to see. If it weren't for the movie verse being so popular, and where now Prime is kind of somewhat based on that, I would have loved to have seen a series that goes back to that 300 years in between, to see what happened between G1 and Beast Wars, what led in. You could even have some of the Beast Wars characters in there, introduce Optimus Primal and Megatron, and just kind of show how they went from Autobots and Decepticons to Maximals and Predacons.
Well, I believe it was briefly discussed in the show. I don't know if I can't remember exactly what episode. But
I know they
think a lot of it had,
upgrade.
Had to do with the scarcity and the difficulty in obtaining Energon. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, weren't the Beast Wars characters like somewhat descendant of the Micromasters? The whole premise behind the Micromasters was that if you follow the G1 Marvel comics, was that they downsized from these big hulking robots to the small ones because the big ones took so much Energon to keep alive, whereas the small mm-hmm. ones could use a very small amount, and they were just more energy efficient. And so after the Micromasters, they just kind of evolved into the techno-organic.
By necessity, they had to go a lot quicker into the change because everybody needs to downsize or you're going to lock up because there's no power.
Yeah, and well, hence why Ravage was not a very big Decepticon, mm-hmm. and he was still around because he was able to survive because he was so small. Your big guys like Soundwave and Starscream Starscream had already been killed, but your bigger guys had all since long gone and shut down. Went into stasis right. because of lack of Energon.
I've heard this before, but I don't think it was ever officially explained. I don't think it was ever any official fiction. I think it's just kind of like the way the fans have worked into it. Because I think in the cartoon, they make a reference to the Great Upgrade, which was when the change happened from Autobot, but they never really explained why it happened or how it happened. They just referred to it as the Great Upgrade. So they kind of gave us some hints about what happened, but never really definitively spelling anything out. And, I would just like to see that as a series, just even if it was just a comic book, just to kind of, even if they just take what the fans have come up with and kind of tried to explain, because I'm not sure how much they got into Micromasters in the comics. I don't think they were touched on that much.
Actually, the Micromasters were in the comics quite a bit.
Okay. Did they have like a miniseries or something? I may have missed that one.
No, it's like the last few issues. I know I can't remember.
Well, I remember reading in the...
There was a patrol. Do you remember an issue of Generation 1 Marvel that had a red car, red and yellow car that was in a pro wrestling match?
I've heard of it, but I don't think I ever actually read it.
That was a road handler. He was a Micromaster from the sports car patrol. He was, featured in that issue. And, there was a number of issues that actually had the Micromasters in. I mean, not a whole lot, but they were in there.
I remember the end of the run. I remember there was a lot of focus on Action Masters. Yeah. That was when Grimlock and the Dinobots had found the Nucleon. They didn't know what it would do at the time, and so they found it and they got uber powerful, but they lost the ability to transform. And then, of course, Prime became an Action Master by completely different means, which was kind of strange. And that was like right at the very end, issue 80. And so I remember the comic ended with them doing the conversion over into Action Masters where they lost the ability to transform. That's where it was kind of going. And so I figured whatever they're doing with the Micromasters for downsizing, that didn't become a universal all Transformers have to do this thing because, like I said, they were kind of aiming more at Action Masters at that point.
Before we wrap up, I just want to kind of go back and forth here briefly about if you could name one of your favorite episodes and your favorite Beast Wars toy. One favorite episode and one favorite Beast Wars toy. What would you have to say?
Both of these I've already kind of mentioned, but I would have to say The Agenda. It was actually a three-parter. I think it was two parts of Agenda, and then the third part had a different name. First episode, season 3. If I can only pick one, it'd be The Agenda Part 2. And the reason why was because again, that's what clicked the nostalgia with me was seeing all those G1 bots laying there in the arc, deactivated. you know, or in stasis. And you know that was, and I think it was called, was it an optimal situation? Was the first episode in season 3, which was kind of concluded the agenda.
I believe that's the name of it.
But if I could group those together, since they were, it was a multi-part story, you know, I would say that little small arc there is like 3 episodes. If I have to pick one, it'd be 2. It's the one where it ended with the "to be continued" after Megatron shot Prime in the head. You know, that would be my favorite episode because, you know, again, seeing Ravage transform for the first time into a tape, you know, that was all right in there too. And hearing that transformation sound, so seeing the old Transformers, hearing the transformation sound, that one just really really kicked with me. Favorite toy. I gotta say, it's gotta be the first one I picked up, the one that got me back into collecting, was the Optimal Optimus. I mean, that toy was just awesome. I mean, he had 4 modes. You know, he looked like a robotic animal, which I can deal with a lot better than I could the realistic looking animals. And there were some other good toys in the line, because I eventually ended up owning all the show characters before I stopped collecting Beast Wars, and then sold them all at the 2008 convention when I decided to get rid of my entire Beast Wars collection. There were some other good toys in there, but maybe it's just the nostalgia because that was the one that got me back. But in my mind, none of them were ever better than Optimal Optimus.
If I had to choose my favorite episode, I would have to say Starscream's Ghost. The one where his spark overtakes that of Waspinator.
Oh, that was an episode called Possession.
Yes. I'm sorry. Starscream's Ghost was an episode in G1. But yeah, Possession. Starscream's spark overtakes Waspinator's, and just the whole episode is really cool to me. And even to this day, when I watch the episode, and that scene where the lightning strikes behind Waspinator, and you can see the ghostly outline of Starscream standing there, it's just so chilling to me. I love it, and you know, it's like, it also kind of makes me feel old because I remember whenever I was little watching the cartoon where Starscream died, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really love that episode. If I had to choose one episode, it would easily be Possession.
That would be my second favorite.
Yeah, my second favorite would be Code of Hero because of how touching it was with Dinobot's death. But if you watch that episode by itself without having any background whatsoever in Beast Wars, it loses its impact. You have to watch Beast Wars from beginning all the way up to that episode to have the impact that it was supposed to have had.
Right, because otherwise it's just, okay, this,
you know, this, you know, robot this character dies, gets killed, do, yeah. You know. But, you know, because it was so poignant, I really like that episode. It's probably my second favorite. As far as toys go, like you said, there are so many great toys in the line, but I would have to say I would go with Beast Wars Megatron. Yes.
Which version? He had 3 toys.
The first version, the purple Barney dinosaur. I really like it because I'm a big fan of T-Rexes, and as far as dinosaurs are concerned, he had a really nice looking T-Rex mode, and in robot mode. I didn't like the fact that he had a T-Rex head as one hand and basically a tail pincher as the other, although, well, actually, no, he did have a fist on the other hand. But, you know, I could live with it because, I mean, he just looked cool. And I would have to say he's easily my favorite Beast Wars toy. I really don't know what I would pick as my second because, you know, Primal was great. You know, there's... I like the Cheetor mold with the exception of the feet. I don't like how it transformed in the feet.
Well, I like the Transmetal Rat Trap.
Waspinator too.
I don't know that I would say Rat Trap being my second favorite though. I think on that I would lean toward Transmetal 2 Megatron with the big red dragon. Mm-hmm. Again, same thing. I didn't like the dragon head as an arm, mainly because, you know, you couldn't do much with the poseability. It was just a big dragon head, and it was kind of like, you know, rubbery plastic. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't even really pose it. But same thing you said with the first Megatron. It just looked cool. especially with all that red shiny plastic and the red chrome plastic. It looked awesome little toy.
I had an opportunity to buy one, a complete one, the other day for about $30. And in retrospect, I kind of wish I had now.
But yeah, that toy just looks awesome. I mean, and I do like the original Megatron toy, too. I liked it more than I thought I would when I picked it up, because, again, that's one of the later toys I got, because I started with those Prime and Megatron Transmetal 2s. And I didn't pick up Megatron until later, and I didn't expect him to be as good as he was. But I still got to say, I like the Transmetal 2 Megatron better.
Yeah. Well, I believe that'll do it this week for Geek Existence Transformers. We've finally was able to squeeze in some Beast Wars there. I wish we could talk about it a lot longer, but it's getting late as we're recording, and I really need to get some rest for work tomorrow. Maybe we might revisit the subject sometime soon.
I think we should do like a whole episode where we can actually discuss the story arcs and stuff more. Just the whole episode be Beast Wars discussion.
Yeah.
Leave out all the other segments.
It's possible. I might do a supplemental sometime on that. I don't know when that would be. Like I said, right now we're trying to get things set up for BotCon, so just keep an eye out for it. We're not going to leave the Beast Wars behind. And we'll also do other lines as well, like maybe Armada, as sucky as it was, in my opinion. We'll talk about the other lines as well. Beast Wars, though, definitely will return to very soon. I don't know when, I'm not going to say. But we hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
This has been Geek Existence Transformers, a GeekExistence.com presentation. Check out our other podcasts, Geek Existence Gaming for the gaming geek in you, and Geek Existence Science and Tech for your sci-fi, science, and tech interests. Both are available on iTunes as well as our website. You can interact with us by visiting our forums on our website at GeekExistence.com/forums, or by following us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekexistence. Search for us on Facebook and send us a friend request. We'd also love to hear from you via email. Our address is geekexistence@gmail.com. Your hosts for this episode were Weird Wolf 1975 and Insane Galvatron. No hamsters or squirrels were harmed in the making of this podcast.